All lines are now bridged.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the USCDI Task Force. With us today, we have our co-chairs, Christina Caraballo, Terry O'Malley. The other members that have joined, Stephen Lane and Cheryl Turney. Have any other task force members joined or on the call?
Hey, Lauren. This is Christina. Sorry I'm a minute late.
Yep, got you. Thanks, Christina. Okay, I'm actually going to turn it right back to you for opening remarks and to get us started.
Okay, great. So I guess we can just move on to the next slide. So today, crew, we're kind of at the final stretches of getting ready for our putting our recommendations together for our meeting to the full committee next week on Wednesday. So Terry and I and our awesome ONC leads have looked at everything that we've discussed over the course of the last month through this task force, as well as combined input we got from the last TITEC committee meeting when we presented our draft recommendations. And we have consolidated a draft recommendation for next Wednesday's meeting that we've hoped everyone has had a chance to review. So with that, we just want to go through, and we can move to the next slide and review what we've got so far. So next slide. We know our charge, so we can move to the next slide. And then one more. So jumping right into our core of our recommendations, we've put together a slide of just general principles that this task force followed, as well as an explanation of how we've moved through each section of the data classes that we were asked to review. So a couple bullets that we put together as guiding principles are promiscuous with recommendations for new elements, and then divide those recommendations into two groups. The two groups that or buckets that we've identified are those that can be implemented using current CERT functionality and those that will require new functionality or programming. That second bucket is probably more of our future bucket, whereas the first one is let's consider turning it on now. For a way to present our data classes that we have been tasked to evaluate, we've broken it down, each down into four slides. The first slide is ONC's recommendations with our response to those specific recommendations. The second slide for each of these is going to be to put in our recommendations and then moving to we jumped ahead one more. Can we go back a slide? Our justification and then questions that we have for the HITECH. Thanks. Now we can move in. So starting with the first one, which is the patient demographics, so we can move to the next slide. We've got on this first slide. Go ahead.
And just for the folks on the phone, we're going to live edit these slides. So actually, you probably ought to pull them up in Google Doc or Google Slides at this point. The goal is by the end of today that we have a final deck that we can submit. So we're going to make this a working session and actually wordsmith and talk about any issues that are not clear or any issues with which task force members have questions or concerns. So I think Johnny was going to pull up the Google Slides.
Johnny's having some online logging in issues, I can share my screen.
And whether it's the Google or just the draft that's not PDF'd, if we could do real live editing for everyone to see, I think that's fine. Thanks, Terry. Introduction.
I don't think the Google presentation matches up with the current presentation at this point. So I'll just edit on the PowerPoint deck.
Perfect. That sounds great.
Maybe I click share my screen. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Thanks, Adam. So as Adam's bringing that up, we've got our first recommendations everybody can see. These shouldn't be new to anyone, but under the first, we have the address and phone number, and address, we have called out some standard formats that we think would be helpful and reference. And then for phone number, we put at the top that we think that the mobile phone number should be primary and then the landline secondary. So I'm going to pause on each slide and give task force members a chance to react or interject with any comments. Stephen,
do you want to chime in? Okay, great.
No. I see the hand. Sorry. We've been
all right, no worries.
Go for it.
Yeah, it's much smaller than my earlier meeting today where they were crazy about the hand raising. Have we done the analysis of U.S. Postal Service and AHIMA to see whether one subsumes the other? I would anticipate, though didn't do the analysis myself, that AHIMA absorbs what's already in U.S. Postal Service. And we might be able to simplify this by just rather than throwing out a number of standards, kind of try to identify one that we want to throw our weight behind.
I think that's an excellent point. We did not do that. Just taking a note, I feel like you're probably right that AHIMA references the Postal Service, but let's verify that.
And I only heard of AHDI on this call. Again, haven't done my own independent research, but again, it might be nice to have kind of a crosswalk of those three that we're naming. Just if anybody has an hour to dig into that and see what you know, whether one includes important elements that the others don't, or if they're really all pretty much in agreement.
I think that's a really great recommendation.
Can people see the note that like I'm just lightly adding in the those little brackets in the box?
Yep.
Okay, great.
And I'll just comment, I think I might have missed the meeting or just don't remember the decision to say mobile is primary and land is secondary, but I really like that idea.
Thank you.
So the other thing about this that's relevant, and I don't recall whether we talked about it, is with adolescents, this is a really key point, is being clear that, you know, that the phone number is actually the patient's number and not the parent's number. So I think that, you know, I know we've got a slide coming up on pediatric demographics, but I think we should call out that these are the patient's phone number. It's very difficult when you've got the parent's phone number entered as the patient's phone number and the kid turns 12 and 16 and 19 and things are really crazy.
Yeah, so actually go back one slide and probably add that, just add, use patient's mobile phone number.
Yeah, patient's individual personal number, not parents or guardians.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, Christina.
No, I wanted to, we were kind of jumping ahead to the pediatric section, and I wanted to see if we were capturing the use of, well, Stephen's point under the pediatrics, because we kind of have pediatrics all consolidated into recommendations around pediatrics, so maybe we want to capture that here as well.
Well, I think here, what we have here is appropriate, that we've got contact information for other individuals. I think the trick is making sure that we have the patient one on slide 8 really well specified as the patient's. I mean, essentially, a newborn doesn't have a mobile number, right?
Not yet, right.
Right, one hopes, even in Palo Alto. That's the point I'm making, is that there shouldn't be a mobile number until the patient themselves has a mobile number, and we should entirely be relying on these contact numbers.
So one thing I want to think about on that statement is, if we were looking at the idea of moving down the patient matching use case, that mobile number is still the most reliable if I'm looking for that kind of 10% last final match, and that mobile number associated with the child is still going to be the best match until the child.
Well, it can still be associated with the child. It's just not the child's mobile number. I think we can accomplish both goals.
I just want to make sure we capture it really clearly in our write-up.
Yeah. So, Stephen, you're saying that, say you had a five-year-old that doesn't have a mobile number, their slot for phone number would be blank, but under their parent, guardian, whatever, there would be an associated phone number.
Exactly. And that associated phone number could still be used for patient matching.
Right.
Perfect. Makes sense. Any other comments on these two slides with patient demographics?
The way you put that language, I'm a little worried. Child doesn't have own number. Use parents, guardians. You can say for matching or other uses, but don't call it the patients. I just want to make sure we really make that clear.
So if we go back on slide one, or the previous slide, we could say includes no available phone number. Indicate no available number. Yeah, so it's just not blank. It's actually a null with a flavor to it.
So I guess when I think about it right now, my daughter's phone number is my mobile phone number. And if I'm looking at the primary place to contact her, I don't know. Okay.
So when does
it shouldn't be. Your mobile number should not be listed as her mobile number. That's what I'm saying.
So her mobile number should be listed as none. And then in the contact area, it would be your mobile number as parent.
Okay, got it. I'm overthinking this. I'm with you.
Right. This is Cheryl. I think the whole essence was to add the mobile phone number as another way to identify a unique person. So having the patient's parent wouldn't help.
Exactly.
Yep.
No, it would. It would, because the parent's mobile number is associated with the patient as a demographic.
Yeah.
And the parent's mobile number could still be used for matching. Yeah.
Yeah, but it wouldn't help in the twins where they both have similar first names and there's already confusion. So,
yep.
I mean, to me, I thought we were going to focus on the fact that it would be the cell phone number of the person, because it's really looking for unique. How can we create a unique identifier?
Yeah,
I think you're supporting what we're saying.
Yeah, I think that's right, Cheryl. I think this does that. I think it just makes it clear that either there is a mobile phone number associated with this person, which is their number that you can contact them on, or there's another mobile phone number associated with their parent, which is also associated with them. So I think it works.
But you're right. The twins, the multiple, you know, pre-adolescents who don't have phones yet, you're right, there will be one parent number, there may be one parent number associated with multiple individuals.
Okay, great. I think we're ready to move on to our next slide.
Okay. And on this slide, I added contact information for Children's Services Case Manager. I'm happy to omit that. It was just a random thought.
Well, it's certainly not specific to children. I mean, any patient could have a case manager, care manager, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I don't think it belongs under pediatric specific.
All right, let's just take it out then, if there's no...
Yeah, objection. And it also gets into the whole area of, you know, care team membership, which isn't really a patient demographic per se. So yeah, I would take it out.
Got it.
Great. So I think we're ready to move to the next slide. Okay, this is a summary of the key discussion points that we took from our call. We've identified two principal use cases for patient demographics, which are patient matching and clinical care. The standard address, including past address, is a reasonable addition. A mobile phone number stood out as the most stable identifier. Future iterations of USCDI should consider biometrics, but we had consensus that they're really not supported at the time for prime time. Pediatric demographic set recognizes an immediate need of service providers to provide clinical care, and secondary attributes as complements to matching logic in USCDI are valuable and will facilitate downstream matching and linking.
You know, another use case that we haven't talked about is identity verification, which I think is important. And I don't know whether you guys would feel comfortable kind of adding it at this late date, but, you know, having lots of different demographics certainly allows you to assure that you've got the right person in front of you.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we need to say three principal use cases.
And I think actually, Stephen, that was discussed in one of our initial calls and somehow lost. So thank you for bringing it back up.
Well, I don't think I was there, so that makes it an even better idea.
Not too new. Okay, great.
There was a cryptic note that said, "Do you know who I am?" I think that was our reference to individual identity.
Great.
Any other? No.
I see no hands in the queue, so I think we're safe to kind of move to the next grouping. Just, we've got a couple questions for HITECH, just asking about more priority use cases besides the three that we just identified. How should we look at the balance between benefits and burden of the proposed changes? And is it reasonable to require certs to turn on what's available?
Well, is it right for us to leave bullet two as a question, or should we make any suggestions there? I mean, because clearly, you know, the benefits are the use cases, right? Though there's clearly, you know, with this pediatric mobile number, one of the benefits, of course, is improved patient privacy. And the burdens, of course, are on the organizations that will
finally be called to standardize the way they collect this data, and the vendors that will be called upon to figure out how to share this data.
Stephen, I think these are more like guiding questions. So based on our dialogue and discussion, things that we've discussed and questions that came up to kind of guide the group. So based on our recommendations, are there any glaring benefits or major burdens that we didn't think about in these recommendations? So it's kind of getting people to look back a slide.
Yeah, so maybe it's just the way the question is phrased. I mean, are there additional benefits or burdens, you know, that need to be considered? Though I don't know,
I like that.
Previous slides, we actually sort of listed out. Yeah, I mean, we don't have a list of benefits and burdens per se.
You know, an alternative would be to put this on the previous slide that just says, in the opinion of the task force, the benefits outweigh the burdens. And then if HITECH members object to that, they can pipe up. Because at least our little group, you know, Stephen, Cheryl, and us, I think we agree to that. I mean, just as a potential alternative.
I like that.
It just seems like, as it's phrased, it's a pretty big question. Yeah, okay, that's fine. I don't quite understand your bullet three there. Do you mean to say making changes in the 2015 CERT requirements?
No, I think our point here was that the 2015 CERT requirements, all of the EHRs have that functionality, but it may not be turned on in all of the EHRs. So they're able to do it, but they may not be doing it because it's not activated.
This is more a requirement for the customers of the products to configure and have workflows in place.
Right. I was thinking through that as a turn on, and it's all the EHR vendors are supporting the capture and sharing of certain information, then what is it, and should it just be turned on for everybody to use as part of the Common Core data set? I mean, the goal is more data, not less, and if all the EHRs support it, but they're just not being told, the providers aren't being told to just turn it on, then maybe we put it in as core because it's there and available.
Yeah, and I guess just by saying it's part of USCDI version 1, it sort of does that automatically, doesn't it? I mean, it says you must have this data and you must share it.
Right.
You have to turn it on.
But there are some, from what I've heard, there are this bucket of data that's available commonly across many EHRs that's not part of USCDI or required. We have not done a full assessment of this, but it was something that's come up in our discussion.
Okay, I guess I see
Val has a comment as well.
Hi, Christina. Mine is a minor one that goes back a slide or two, so it's not related to this conversation. So when this is over, I'll chime in.
Okay, great.
Yes, I'm just still not clear on what bullet three means. but if you are.
Gary, any other way to clarify that one?
Yeah, I'm thinking do we have examples of anyone who is not using their full 2015 capabilities? Do we know that as a fact? I guess if we do, then we can be pretty confident with this statement that it's, then they just got to turn them on, get with it. If we don't, then to Stephen's point, this may just be extraneous and that they're going to have to do it anyway.
Okay, so I'm wondering if this last bullet should go into phase two when we're looking at kind of the expansion process, a recommendation to do an evaluation on what's commonly available across certified EHRs that's not a part of USCDI right now.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that makes sense, Christina.
Even how does that sound?
Fine.
We can drop it into our new Google Doc for phase two.
Great. Okay, I think we're ready to jump back to the slide you wanted to go to, Val.
Yeah, just a quick question. So I think that we're recommending that we use current address and prior addresses. That was my understanding. And so I wondered if on slide 8, where we say, you know, the proposed data element is addressed in our task force recommendations, it looks like we just say they should be standardized. Do we need to add that they should have, it should be current and prior? You know what I mean? Because on slide 10, we say, standard address, including past addresses, is a reasonable addition.
Oh, I see. So make that explicit in an earlier slide. Yeah.
Yeah, because it seems like that is one of our recommendations, but it's not actually in the table as one on slide 8.
Okay.
Great catch.
Sure.
Yeah, good idea. So here we should say, standardized format and content for current address and prior addresses.
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, just put capture. Oh, yeah, perfect. Yeah, Adam, got it.
Yeah, something like that. Okay.
Are we ready to move to data provenance? Any other thoughts on patient demographics? Okay, Adam, I think we can move to provenance.
Okay.
Harry, you want to take us through this?
Sure. So the three ONC data elements are on the left, author, author timestamp, and organization. And our recommendation was drop author and use source.
I guess I just think we need to define the term. Because source could be interpreted as the organization or the HIT vendor, you know, that we need to define it. I think what we mean is the individual or entity that created or documented the data. So I think we mean the nurse that took the blood pressure or the, you know, and as we've said, we kind of need to define it, you know, for the lab. Is it the lab tech? Is it the machine? Is it the medical director? And I think we said the medical director, but we need to define source.
We get onto that a little bit on the next slide, but I think, you know, just thinking about how provenance is likely to evolve, you know, source is likely to be a pretty, not particularly granular element to begin with. You know, with the exception
of... But even though we're not going to have all the granularity, and I agree with you, we still have to have some sort of definition. So it's not just garbage in.
Yeah.
I had a couple of conversations just this week. You know, I was chatting with Dave Froman about this very thing, and I think he, you know, his thoughts from Epic aligned with ours. You know, looking at the source and the last touch was a reasonable place to start, but, you know, we still need to, you know, as we said, you know, this idea of a matrix that goes by, you know, data type, you know, what's the right source for that data, as you say on the next slide, we've got that. I think that's still really important.
Yeah. So,
this is Cheryl. I'm sorry I raised my hand, but I was hoping source was still going to be sort of some ID level for an organization, and then now we've added the name and location. Because then within an organization, you can always interrogate, you know, the system itself, because the conversation we had that I was part of talked about, you know, with all of the records being updated, you know, what are you going to use and how does it know, you know, who's the last one and what they must have updated and all of that sort of stuff. So if you're looking for an audit trail, you can always get that from within an organization. But really, in terms of interoperability, this is information like going out to whoever's receiving it. They want to make sure that, is this a trusted source? And then, you know, who I expected to be responding to my inquiry. So if I'm a patient and I am looking for information, or if I'm an organization looking for information, you know, I'm hoping that I'll know who some of the partners are. I might know who all of them are if it's an emergency situation, but I don't necessarily, from an organization, have no way to evaluate, you know, a person or a name. So I thought we were talking about source being defined, and I do agree we need to define it more being like an ID that would be somehow created through some technical standard to know that it's a trusted source or something.
Yeah, in a sense, provenance becomes the assurance that it's from a trusted source. So what elements in provenance do we need to make that possible? And at the highest level, it probably is to identify on an enterprise level. Now, this data came from Partners Healthcare, right? And if you go back to Partners and say, okay, where did it really come from within your vast organization?
the audit trail is internal to the partners, and they can tell you it came from the lab at Newton Wellesley Hospital. I mean, so I'm wondering if source, to begin with, couldn't just be a very high level
institutional, you know, essentially.
Yeah, what's the first door I have to go through if I'm looking for the actual source of this information?
You know, I think that's a really reasonable way to approach this, given that we don't have all of this granular definition or agreement. But it's interesting because they call that author and author organization. What we're sort of saying is really we need the organization. But that's the place to start because we don't have enough specificity of what it means to be an author.
Yeah, although, speaking out of both sides of my mouth here, so we can say really a high-level institutional source, and then on the next page we say, but then again, if it's a note, we want the author. You know, if it's a radiology report, we want the author.
You want the radiologist, right?
Yeah, I think.
Right.
Or
so,
do we, you know, or again?
No, you're getting on the right. Is this the author of the clinical note, or is this the source of the interoperability exchange? That's what we need to define here, exactly.
Good point. Right.
Well, and that goes back to the point about the original author and the last touch, you know, the original organization and the organization you actually got it from. So I think, you know, for each of these, I think that's important. Frankly, the timestamp probably as well. So for author, organization, and timestamp, I mean, I think you want author shouldn't apply to the last touch unless it's identical. That's the, sort of the first touch, or really the other thing that Cheryl, you just pointed out, is it's also the last edit. I mean, author, there's also the issue of editor, which is not included here at all. But if data was edited from the time it was first authored, I think that's really important.
So maybe the way to handle this would be to say that for health information exchange, we need for the transaction to be able to be mapped to a source, which is an enterprise and a date and time stamp. And then for a clinical note, you want to know who the author is, the author's time stamp, and the author's organization, if that's what you're keying in on. But I think those are two different sets of data elements.
Yeah. And the question is whether you only need to have the first set, for interoperability. Are you a trusted source? Do I know who you are? And you will then vouch for where it came from within your organization. And I don't really care who the actual author is, unless I want to go do a deep dive. What I really want to know is that it's coming from you and you're vouching for it.
You know, I'm frustrated by the fact that, you know, Steve Posnack clearly sort of slapped us down and said, you know, don't extend this too far for this first version. So I think, you know, author, editor, last touch, those are all really important for the future. But, you know, we've been instructed to focus on this. So this is really the original author.
Well, there's nothing that says, though, that first version we can say what we really need is the source. The source timestamp, and then for future versions, although not part of version one, we do see that we would need author timestamp and organization related to the various clinical notes. So that, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having that in our recommendation.
Right. So on this slide, we perhaps in the white space could put a definition for source that says, for interoperability, the source is the identified entity making the information available.
Well, isn't that just the organization? I mean, how is that different?
Yeah, whatever it is. So the organ and it
the organization can be, you know, an integrated delivery network. It can be a freestanding lab.
Actually, that's a really good point. I mean, if the patient was at Partners and they had a lab drawn that was done at Quest, the organization is probably, I don't know, is the organization Partners or Quest?
Right. Well, if it comes through Partners, then Partners is. And if you ask Partners, they'd say, we got it from Quest.
Right. But so is Quest the author and is Partners the organization in that case?
Well, Partners is providing
the query or the response, though, right? Like, what is it that you're exchanging? If it's you're sending out a thing that you need to have a lab order done, then it would be coming from Partners. They would be the source, right? If it's results coming back, then the source is going to be Quest.
Right. Right, and Quest could send the results to the patient directly or to Partners, who then sends it on through a portal. So I think for a first level for interoperability, the identity of the source is really at the entity level and not any more granular than that. Because if we know where it came from, then presumably within that source, they can actually drill down to find out who the lab tech was that drew the blood.
Well, I think we have to state that, you know, that presumption.
All right, so maybe we got to, maybe
let's
leave.
Actually, Terry, we might want to jump to slide 14 because we have our discussion of the recommendations. And maybe we want to add some context around that. And we might have some of this captured in the discussion slide.
So let's put a definition on this slide that we're happy with relative to source. But I think you're right, Christina. Then go to the discussion and amplify it. So I think we can put, so Adam, I think we can go and just put the definition, not have to put it on each line, but just put it at the bottom. You know, source equals, you know, entity level identifier. Something like that. Would that suffice? Cheryl, Stephen,
I mean, entity level or, you know, organization, that works for me.
Okay. All right, you want to put organizational level instead of entity? I mean,
I was pulling up our original Google document and our grid says, you know, we had author as a subset of sources, but sources can be even inclusive of machines and data aggregators and other things. So it's getting back to just, it's more inclusive than less. And this is just from previous discussions that we've got highlighted in our Google Doc.
You know what, one thing I think we could do on this slide that suggests, under, so it's author, author's timestamp, author's organization. I would change that to author organization. The organization from which this data was obtained. I think that's kind of what you're getting at, Terry, and the organization that would know the details. You know, which nurse got the blood pressure, which, you know, lab check drew the blood, et cetera.
So maybe it's the originating organization, the organization that originated.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Rather than author.
Okay.
which is tainted.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this very common use case that we just identified, you know, the partner's patient that had a lab drawn that was sent out to Quest, you know, reference lab. You know, in my
right.
mind, the author is the medical director of the Quest lab, but the source organization is partners, as opposed to
right,
Quest.
Right, but let's flip it the other way. If this is electronic, like, let's say, lab order, then the author would be the physician ordering the test or, you know, physician assistant, whoever it is, and then the organization is partners. So in that case, wouldn't the lab need to know which doctor ordered the test?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. So that's the author of the order as opposed to the author of the result.
Yeah,
so
but the author then is the one who's the one making the order. So I do think there's merit in having all three here. In that case, because we want to allow it to be able to be supported by multiple types of use cases. We don't want to prescribe one type of use for it.
But so I would push back and say, but you're really talking about an internal process, an internal workflow, rather than interoperability. So if, you know, what information do I need from you as the originating source? And as long as I'm happy that I know who you are, then I will take your information. And if I need more detail on where that information came from, who ordered it, which lab performed it, then I will ask you. But you don't have to tell me unless I ask you. Which also is consistent with a sort of point to last point provenance. I only need to know where I got the information from. I don't need to know where you got it from. So, what if we change source to or it's almost originator to
origin
of the data, you know, trying to get the right word.
And are we agreeing that that's the actual who harness the electrons to make the documentation?
Yeah, and then who's moving that documentation to you? So I just need to know who that is. So within an originator, there will be multiple sources. There'll be machines, there'll be authors, there'll be, you know, MRI units, whatever. But we only need to know that the originator can find out. Again, that originator may not be the right word. I guess the general principle is for interoperability, the entity providing the data that's being shared is considered the originating source. The source of the originating source. I can know.
Really? So you're saying that last touch is the originating source? I don't think so.
Well, unless
they use the word author. I mean, that's the beginning originator, not the last touch. I think we need to, in future versions, grab editors and last touch. But our task has been to really define the author piece.
Yeah, but author is really too restrictive. Unless you define it as source. So it's not the author. And again, it's not who necessarily created the data element. It's which entity is moving that data element.
I think they've asked us to comment on author, and I really do think it's creator. So I think the author is the creator or the source of the data. Timestamp is when that occurred, and the author organization is the organization within which that event occurred. And then I think that in our commentary we say, and future versions of provenance should include editors along the way and last touch. But if all they're asking us is to comment on author, I think we should leave it as author. And I'll try to shut up.
But not if we don't think author is correct. So in other areas, we've said omit certain data elements, especially in the pediatric section. So I think this has been a core of our discussion, is do we have the right definition here, and is author the right word? And we've discussed it extensively. I don't know the answer, but I don't think that just leaving author and commenting based on this discussion would be the route to go.
Well, so maybe it goes to the question to the committee, right? Question to the HITECH. Should author organization represent the organization within which the data was initially collected and documented, or should it include the last touch?
So my comment to author is I think it's too granular at this stage. I think author's organization, which is what we're calling the source organization, to me makes more sense as a first stab at provenance.
So you're saying don't include author. But as Cheryl keeps saying, if you're talking about a clinical note or an order, we know that data is available, and we wouldn't want to not include it. Author may be too granular for some data elements, the vital signs as we've discussed. But for others, it seems like it's readily available, and we wouldn't want to throw it out.
Well, if we made the exception for clinical notes, you know, if there's a discrete identifiable author, I mean, really author in the sense that I created this note, then
include it. Yeah, but future work would be to define how we're going to use the term author for other data types.
Right. I think at this stage it's more important for orders because, you know, I can envision using this mechanism for orders and results. And I think it's more important that the lab or X-ray facility or whoever it is knows who the doctor is that's ordering it.
That's pretty well established. I mean, ordering provider information is readily available, you know, for orders and results interfaces. I don't think there's a gap there that we're needing to close.
And is that really proper?
Okay, I don't know, so that's why I'm just throwing it out. If that gap is already closed, then my comment's not viable at that point. But, as I said, too, it's probably a lower priority, but I can see it would have merit with clinical notes at some point.
Okay. Well,
I'm not. So, again, I just to reiterate, I think at this stage of provenance, knowing the entity that is generating, packaging, sending the interoperable information, that's who we need to know. I think we just need to know it at that level as a first step.
So could we leave author and add source, or do author/source when author is not relevant and defaults to source?
Maybe in our definition is just, again, it's the originator of the data, which is an entity level identifier, except when there's an identifiable author, as in clinical notes. Would that serve? Again, I think the real discussion point is going to be around the last touch. That sort of underpins this. Okay. Well, let's carry on. We'll come back to this. Okay?
Sounds good.
Sounds good to me.
So then we have our other recommendations, which sort of flesh out what we're discussing. That we need more granularity about what sources are. And we get more granular later on. So I think those are probably pretty non-controversial. The most controversial source item on this page is the first bullet under other, and that's proposing a standardized metadata template. Or is that not controversial? Okay, does silence mean assent or confusion?
Yeah, it means thought.
Okay.
No, I still think, yeah, I think that makes sense. Standardized metadata template for each data type. Right? That's what we're getting at.
Type or element? So for each data element, it's going to get a tag. It's going to say what kind of data it is. This is a test. This is an X-ray report. It's going to tell us who it came from, who the people are sending, who the sending entity is, source ID, and then
and actually source is probably not source timestamp, it's probably the timestamp when that data element was generated.
How is that different?
It's not when the source sent it, it's when...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. The report was done on April 1st, but I'm sending it to you on the 5th.
So it's the 1st is the timestamp.
The timestamp.
Right. I didn't see this as being required for every data element. I saw it at a record level. So what we're saying now sounds to me like much more difficult to implement. And that's why I'm pausing, because I didn't see it at the element level. I saw it as the, at the exchange level.
So explain to me.
Remember, exchange is going to be much more than documents, right? I mean, it's going to be down at the fire resource level. So we really need to think about the elements.
Right. But again, if we take this as the source of the data that's being sent, then what partners is sending to the lab is, all of the data that has been requested, whatever for this patient. So, at the end of the day, if you have it at the data element level, then, just think about what that's going to mean in terms of the payload of what's going to be going back and forth.
But I think that's what we want. We want it down at that data element level. So the data element metadata will include this.
And the payload has got to be as light as possible. You're right, Cheryl. So that, so these, as a start for knowing, being able to know where the information came from, if we tag each element, then we'll know. We'll know I got it from partners rather than from Steward Healthcare, because the source ID is different, even though the data type is the same. And the data.
And this gets at that issue of the patient home blood pressure versus,
right,
the one collected in the healthcare system.
My hesitancy is not knowing to what degree that can be implemented, like what's going to be the burden to implement something like that, and, is that reasonable?
Good point.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, for the most part, I envision we're going to be requesting data and be the receiver. The burden's going to be on, the facilities and the providers and the labs providing data back and forth. That it just seems to me like that's quite a large ask, and I wouldn't want us to make a recommendation that essentially can't be implemented.
I don't think the burden on this one is really at the level of the provider or the data generator so much as it's at the level of the health IT system that's packaging up the data to send it. I mean, that kind of data is going to be in whatever the actual source system is or the system on which the data was initially entered.
Right, but think about it. That's more like an audit trail than what we had discussed before, and that's going to end up costing providers more in order to have systems like this that can communicate that way, because I don't believe that they do that today. And that really, to me, speaks more of an audit trail than what we had said in the beginning we wanted to go to. So, again, I don't know the answers. I'm not as familiar with the technical workings of an EHR system. You guys are more the experts on that. I'm just throwing it out as the silent observer and many years in technology and many environments.
Yeah, I think your point's really well taken, but I must say, being involved for the last 2 days in a lot of discussions about, you know, how much providers can trust the external data that they received and how important the provenance data is for them to have in order to integrate that external data into the workflows, you know, whether it's a vital sign or a lab result or a note. I don't think it's too much to ask, frankly, but I hear you. I'm not disregarding.
Do we have anyone on this committee that represents the EHR systems that can speak to that? I mean, I'm not, because I can't. I'm just asking the question. I'm trying to see all sides.
Yeah, well, Ken and Stephen are Epic Shops. You know, and again, I don't. And my sense is that this is not a big lift. They're most likely tagging each data element already for their audit trail. In a sense, provenance is an audit trail.
When it came up in our small group, we had agreed that audit trail would be a future, and that's the only reason why I brought it up again. But I'm fine with it staying in there. I mean, again, like, I have no objection to it. I just want to make sure that it's something can be delivered on.
Yeah, well, let's raise that in the discussion and the questions to the high tech. I think you're absolutely right. We'll punt it to them. I mean, we'll make our recommendation, but
yeah,
we'll let them. And then the last tag on here is, and if you remember way back about the original USCDI discussions about sort of reasons why data doesn't flow, one of them was local codes. So this becomes a critical issue in interoperability. The data has to come out tagged using a standardized code set rather than internal local codes. Or it'll be meaningless.
100% agree.
Yeah, okay. Okay, next page. Da-da-da. Moving along. So, this is why we chose source. Or entity, or originator, or something.
I like originator.
All right.
I think source continues to include some confusion.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm the original one that brought up source, but it was because when I met with the FHIR group in my office, they talked about the fact that that's something they need already on the FHIR transactions. So that's the only reason why I brought it up. You know, I don't know if it means anything to have any consistency in the nomenclature, but that's the reason why I threw out that term.
So let me propose, let's say originator / source. Let's mash both terms together.
That works.
You know, just, and we'll do that on the preceding slide as well. So it's just really originator slash source. And then it would just repeat that wherever we have source.
Can I ask a question here? And this might not be the right place, and I don't want to throw us off track because I think we're making good progress. But in the information blocking task force meeting we had this morning, one of the things we're talking about was consent and how do we know in the way we're going to exchange information when a patient has specifically declined to consent. And the reason why this is important, especially in this regard, is that sometimes they don't want even the provider that they went to see to be
right,
known by other providers. So how would we envision that to work in this arrangement? So it, like, a query went out, the originator, you know, are they going to say, oh, well, you know, we're not allowed to share based on consent, or would the response be, you know, not applicable, or how would we envision that to work?
Yeah, and part of that conversation at the USCDI task force, and I think where we ended up with that was, you know, roughly half of the committee agreed that that we should look to a future where consent data is part of USCDI appropriate defined standards. The other half of the committee abstained.
It was conversation, because I thought we brought it in because of Cynthia's comment, and then she abstained. So I didn't follow all that. But to me, I'm looking at this saying, okay, even in this version, how would it work if you've actually have a patient that said, no, you know, I don't want you to share my data. You certainly have data, but you can't share it, and they don't even want you to share the fact that they saw you. So how would that work if you get a query from someone, what's your response supposed to be in this version of USCDI? Like, what would you say? Not applicable, or I don't have information to share, or, like, what's the response we're going to get?
Well, it's out of our scope right now, but it's probably, you know, it's probably a filter issue. You know, so you would, before you release any information, you'd pass it through a final filter that had the individual's consent for whatever use. You know, so it'll be, sure, we have the information, we'll package it up, but before it leaves us, it's got to go through a final checkpoint.
Yeah.
And at the checkpoint, the response might be, not permitted use, or something like that.
Yeah, non-permitted use. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it wouldn't change anything that we're talking about here in terms of author or any of that. So, okay, that's all I was looking. You know, would that impact any of those things that we're talking about? And that use case really wouldn't apply. So, all right, I'm good.
So again, just the other points on here, a unique and persistent identifier for each data element. Short, sweet, hopefully these three elements will be enough. And then we're going to need things. So Christina and I are going to talk to Clem on Monday just to see if there are any standardized taxonomies for data types and source types. If there are, you know, we'll take them.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
And then, you know, then with, so we start with these three things as our unique identifiers. And if we find that that's insufficient or excessive, then the next version, you know, correct it in the next version. We're not going to get it all right the first time around. So.
I agree. I think we're in a good place.
Okay. Moving right along. So here's your data element question, Cheryl. Do we need it at this level? And then there's sort of the last touch question. These are big questions.
Yeah, and I would add in the editor question. You know, again, it was really just you know, I've been really focused on originating source and last touch. But again, with some of the discussions we've had in ISPTF, you know, it's original. Anyone who actually modified the data along the way, who, when, what, and then last touch. It seems to me you need three eventually.
Yeah,
you don't need the whole blockchain and the whole audit trail, but you probably need those.
So the way I've thought about that, and which may be wrong, is that if I know the source of my data, so I mean, I know it's coming from you, Stephen. I only need to be able to go back and find you and have you tell me where you got it from. And you may know who edited the original data. It might be the source before you. It might be Ken who sent it to you. And Ken may have changed data that he got from a previous source.
So, but I don't need to know that unless I ask. And in a sense...
But the way you're describing the ask is so labor-intensive as to be impossible, right?
Yeah, but...
Is
it likely to be... How common is it going to be, do you think?
Well, I guess I'm putting myself in the seat of these providers who are saying to me, well, I'm only going to be able to integrate outside data into views and workflows and decision support and analytics when I can really trust it.
Yeah.
And how do you really, you know, to really trust it, it seems to me, author, editor, less, you know, and source, my source. And it's like when you're, you know, when you buy drugs on the street, right? It's like, where did it come from? Who's messed with it? And who am I buying it from? Not that I do that, but, or you never did that, but that's the thought.
But if I were to,
right. If I were to do it, that's what I would want, right?
I own black vein on my
added,
right.
On my weed.
So that's a right. So that gets to bullet two. You know, because if you want to know the original source, and then anyone who modified it, then the payload around data elements might get really big. That was my own concern.
I mean, it's not that big, really. I mean...
Well, I mean, so... But we can have that discussion, all right? I mean, maybe under that bullet, you know, we should say, do we need to know whenever the data element has been edited? Something like that.
Need to know historically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good question for the high tech. Is this an appropriate future direction for provenance?
Yeah. Let them figure it out. God, we're working hard enough. Okay. All right. We're making progress. We've got 11 minutes. Where are we? Clinical notes. Adopt. All right. We thought all the notes were good. And then as our little consensus group, we said add all the other HL7 document types.
They're CCDA document types, right?
Right, CCDA.
Yeah,
CCDA. And then per our concerns that we may not have adequate standards for the following three document types, but they are important, and if we have standards, we should advance them. That was the med list.
Now, Terry, remind me, that LTS, is that a thing? That's a defined node type, or you just wrote...
It's going through, the IG is going through ballot as we speak at HL7.
Okay.
So it will come out.
That's what it's called? Or are those two different ones? Is there long-term services? And, or is that
long
one?
Supportive care plan. So it's a long-term services and support care plan note.
Yeah, okay. Care plan. Good.
Okay. All right. Moving right along. So we're just saying add all the other stuff. So put in consolidated CDA before that too, yeah. And basically the point being that other people besides the eligible providers have data needs and the original selection of notes wasn't really quite good enough. And then we call out the new proposed notes individually.
That looks good.
Okay.
Shouldn't that third bullet be on top, third sub-bullet?
There's structure should come under care than these transfers.
Because that's sort of related to including all the CCDA document types.
Yeah, right. Okay, so move it up under the first bullet. Yeah, right.
And then indent it.
Okay. Got it, yeah, okay. Alrighty. All right. So we'll just ask the high tech, what do they think?
Here again, you want CCDA added.
Okay. All right. Pediatric vital signs. So
okay.
I had a chance to review this with the experts from Epic yesterday as well. And again, they sort of were thinking about it the same way that we are, that the only one that's really a vital sign is the head circumference, that the BMI and the weight for age are simply arithmetic calculations based on vital signs, and the percentiles, whether it's for BMI or for any of the other vital signs, are all derived. And that it really makes sense for us to include, add the head circumference, but that derivation, doing the math and doing the derivation, they felt was probably best left to the receiving system, which is a little different than where we ended up last time, which was saying it adds context for systems that don't do that. But really, you know, their point as developers was to say, this is not hard. I mean, that's not hard computer programming. I mean, a junior computer programming undergrad, you know, could write the code to calculate weight for length, you know, and even and a senior could do the percentiles. This is not, you know, so any PHR, nursing, home care system should be able to do that. And that they felt made more sense than making those data, forcing vendors to store them and send them and receive them and manage them. That was a lot of burden for little benefit.
So if we go to the next slide, we need public comment. Are we we're at that time?
Yeah, we should probably break now since we only have 6 minutes left in the call.
Okay. Let's ask for public comment and come back while we're waiting. How's that?
Okay. Can you open the line?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you'd like to move your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
Not at this time.
Okay. All right, Terry, back to you.
Okay. So let's go back to the previous slide, wherever we were. Pediatric vital signs. All right, so this is our recommendations. We said if you aren't going to omit weight for age per length, at least correct it to what it should be. Next slide. I don't think there's anything on there we care about. And then this is just the point that just make sure it applies to all age groups, the USCDI vital signs list. Not a big lift. And then the next slide.
Well, could we maybe add one, or maybe it goes on this slide, I'm not sure, but the notion that percentiles are valuable, and when and if we feel they should be calculated and exchanged as calculated values, it should apply to all vital signs, not to selected ones.
All right. You want to add that?
Yeah, I think so.
So the preamble to that is calculated values are important, and when and if they're felt to be required, they should apply to all values. So if calculated values such as percentiles and BMIs.
Percentiles for, yeah. I was going to say percentiles for age, gender.
Yeah.
all the percentiles are age gender based.
Yeah. Okay. And they require the supply to all of us. Okay. Sure. That sounds good. Next one. So, and this just highlighted our divergence of opinion. All right. But it sounds, Stephen, like you're coming to the raw data only group.
Yeah, I see the argument, you know, when you think about the burdens and the benefits. And my thinking was it would be hard for a home care system or a PHR to do that, and I was convinced by developers that was really no big deal.
I mean, perhaps the compromise.
If they just have the raw data, they can do all the things that are needed to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, even personal health record, I mean, someone's going to build the app for that. So. Okay. Is that it? Is that our last slide?
I think so.
Oh, we have one more. What's that one?
Raw data versus calculation.
Yeah. Do we need to ask them that or no? Yeah, we can ask them. That's okay. All right. So in the last, what's this one? Oh, so this is on the other stuff. Thinking about provider demographics. And then, Stephen, after the phone call, I talked with Rich Antonelli. I don't know if you know Rich, but he raised some interesting things about some other pediatric measures that aren't really vital signs, but they're sort of core pediatric measures. So I don't know. So I threw those in.
These are quality measures, you're saying.
Yep. Part of the Medicaid.
So, right. So I guess the question is he saying that he wants to know that they were done, which really sort of, or that he wants to actually know the results? Because sharing screen, that's important. Developmental assessment, important. Vision screening, important. I don't think they belong in USCDI version 1, but that's a really good point that in the future those are very appropriate considerations to add.
And then the last was the standard quality query response template.
Right, which sort of gets at were those things done as opposed to what were the results.
Yeah.
So you might even flip the order. You might flip the order of those, so quality metric, performed, yes, no, and then the Medicaid, the measurements would be the contents thereof. So it's not about done by. So I would take out the by 3 months or the at 9/18/36 and by 34. I would just say hearing screen, developmental assessments, and vision screens, those are Medicaid mandated pediatric measurements, and they should be, added to the USCDI when we can.
Okay. So let's just, so we'll take all the timestamps off. Okay. Or all the time qualifiers. All right. Great. Great. We'll get more room on the slide, too. Excellent. Okay. And then probably, Adam, just flip bullet 2 and bullet 3. Just flip the last two. Okay. Great. I think that's it. We're 1 minute over.
Okay. Great. Thank you, guys.
Flip these.
Thanks, everyone.
Two. Okay. Great job.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. See you Wednesday.